Is Tanya Doherty. She is currently the residency director and clinical coordinator for the Department of Pharmacy at Penn Presbyterian Medical Center in Philadelphia. She is also adjunct faculty with the University of Pennsylvania Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. She is a clinical pharmacy specialist in ambulatory care and family medicine with areas of interest in anticoagulation, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, and women's health. Her areas of practice are both in the hospital and the community setting. She is a preceptor for pharmacy students and residents and is involved in research initiatives around patient-centered medical home model of care and transitions in care across the healthcare continuum.
Thank you, Maggie. It's always tough being the last speaker at the end of a long day, so I appreciate everyone staying here, and I'll try to make this as exciting as possible to keep everyone awake. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a first-year member and presenter here at APHA, and it's been a great experience for me. So today I'm going to be talking about community-based care and how pharmacy services can be integrated in community-based care. I have nothing to disclose. And the objectives of our study were to determine the impact of pharmacists and pharmacy student services within a family medicine residency community-based medical care program. Essentially, pharmacists and pharmacy students have been part of interdisciplinary care, but there are very limited studies in looking at how the care can be integrated within a home visit program and/or a community-based medical care program to provide care to patients within their home and their community. And family medicine residents, as well as internal medicine residents, there is a requirement for them to have some sort of home-based care as part of their educational curriculum and residency requirements as set forth by the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education. And essentially, all residents need to make at least 2 home visits for patients in the community, and they need to be part of interdisciplinary care throughout their continuum through their residency experience. And what that means is interdisciplinary care. I've kind of highlighted some of the aspects of residency education, that is internal medicine and family medicine residency education, what that encompasses for interdisciplinary care. Basically, with patient care, working with other healthcare professionals to provide patient-focused care, providing practice-based learning and improvement by aiding with the assistance of students and other healthcare professionals, development of interpersonal and communication skills, working with other healthcare professionals, as well as systems-based practice to understand how other professionals can assist with the overall care of a patient throughout the healthcare continuum. So what are we looking at in terms of the impact of providing care in the community? What are we hoping to achieve by going out to patients' home and providing them with care in their home and community environment? Well, we're hoping that we reduce acute care utilization, that is, reduce the number of readmissions or emergency room visits. There was a very good study looking at an interdisciplinary care team going out to the home, which included pharmacists, specifically for heart failure patients, showing that there was a 50% reduction in readmissions when patients were visited in the home within 2 weeks of being discharged from the hospital, which, if you know anything about the hospital, it's all about reducing readmissions. And, of course, we're hoping to improve patient satisfaction by receiving care in the home. And there's a central part of competency development for pharmacy students as well as residents in terms of how to approach care to patients by actually seeing them within their home care environment and seeing what type of community they live in. We integrate education for our residents and students around being able to identify medication-related problems, understanding what community resources are available for patients within their own community, and assess patient-specific health care needs while being out there in the home with the patient. So I had mentioned I'm from Philadelphia, so we're in West Philadelphia, very urban area, poor socioeconomic status patients that we serve in our community. And our care team, our Penn community-based care team that's affiliated with the Department of Family Medicine, consists of both an attending and resident physician, a social worker, and myself, plus or minus a pharmacy student. And essentially, patients are visited in the home for one of four subject areas, usually. That is a post-hospitalization or acute care follow-up, a medication assessment or reconciliation, to discuss long-term care options with the patient, as well as to assess the environmental effect on their illness by assessing the environment that they live in. For our curriculum, for our community-based care curriculum, we obviously have a whole set of methodologies that the residents have to go through to set up patients to visit them in their home. And basically, the residents are on their two-week community medicine curriculum requirement, and the patient selection is resident-driven, as it is of right now. And basically what we do is we have a pre-visit discussion with the resident, myself, the attending, the pharmacy student, to talk about our goals for the visit, what we're hoping to achieve at the end of the visit, and then we have a post-visit discussion as to how did it go, what did we learn from the experience, and what are we going to do to follow up with the patient to ensure that their care is provided in an appropriate manner for them. And for this study, we did a prospective data review on all of the patients that we visited in their homes by the University of Pennsylvania Department of Family Medicine community-based care team between 2006 and 2011. We collected data on visit reason, adverse events that were noted, medication-related problems, and all of the interventions that me and the pharmacy students made were also collected and analyzed for trends. So patients were obviously assessed in their home environment, and the whole team was engaged in collaborative decision-making with the patient. And as part of the pharmacy piece of the community-based care, we evaluated medication-taking habits in the home, we did medication reconciliation, we assessed adherence, and also provided medication use counseling. And right there on the spot, we made recommendations based upon the patient's current home regimen to improve adherence or to reduce the possibility of a side effect or to actually address adverse events that we had identified, which I'll talk about in a minute. So we visited 48 patients in the last few years. The mean age was 58 and ranged from a broad range of 24 years all the way up to 92 years of age. Most of the patients were actually female, 71%, which I thought was quite interesting. The reasons for going out to the home and setting up a community-based care visit were mostly for medication assessment or reconciliation or a post-hospitalization or post-acute care visit. Others included home care needs and long-term care needs assessment. So within the pharmacy piece of this home care program, we found almost two medication-related problems per patient that we visited, and that ranged from 1 to 7 per patient. 53% of the time, half of the time about, it was related to adherence issues, and the other half of the time it was related to a potential adverse drug event. What are the medication adverse drug events that we found? They were mostly related to either taking too much of a medication, taking too much that was prescribed. That was 1 in 5 patients were taking too much prescribed. There was wrong administration, whether they were taking at the wrong times, which can have a lot of implications when you're talking about insulin. If you're not taking, you know, the quick-acting insulin with meals, that can obviously have a very adverse event consequence associated with it. Some patients were actually taking a medication that should have been stopped, that the doctors actually told them to stop taking this medication and they are still taking it. Some patients were taking expired meds. A few patients were taking duplicate therapy, meaning in the same drug class. We identified a few patients with low health literacy or patients who were taking too little of medication. When you look at the preventable adverse drug events, this was the most compelling or outstanding thing that I had seen about our experience was that we had identified 13 serious preventable adverse drug events in 48 patients. About 1 in 3 patients had a preventable adverse drug event. And we're not talking like, you know, diarrhea due to a medication. We're talking about, again, like taking their short-acting insulin without eating. One patient had a gastrointestinal bleed and she was on warfarin, and she was told to stop the warfarin after her visit, and we went to the house, and she was still taking her warfarin. So these had a very high cost utilization implications if patients were continuing to take these medications or taking them inappropriately. And current with the literature, most of the preventable adverse drug events were related to the high-risk drugs like insulin or diabetes medications, warfarin, which is the oral anticoagulant, antihypertensives, inhalers, antiepileptics, and diuretics. And we as a team found solutions for all of these preventable adverse drug events that were identified at the point of care in the patient's home. And during that time period, we made almost one intervention, active intervention per patient that we had seen, about 30, that the attending physician had accepted, things like stopping a medication because the patient's blood pressure was too low and didn't need it, switching to lower cost alternatives, setting up with prescription assistance programs, frequency reduction or medication switch to help with adherence, home delivery setup, and device assessment and education. And all community participants were given a patient-specific medication administration chart before we left, and it was appropriately literacy-based as well. Oops. And just to end my discussion, I just wanted to highlight one of the more compelling patients that we had seen in one of our recent, it wasn't that recent, this was about a year ago. This was a 47-year-old African-American male who was a mentally challenged patient who basically lived at home or their condominium with his mother, who was his primary caregiver. His mother was in her late 70s. And he had severe sleep apnea. He's had about 12 hospitalizations in the previous 6 months. He was a very high-risk patient whom we had gone out to the home. This is a list, these are all of his medications. He was not taking any of these medications. He was a home delivery medication person. You know, they basically deliver their home medications on a monthly basis as long as there's refills. And we found out that he was illiterate. So he could not read any of his medications. He couldn't read any of the bottles. Every time he went to the hospital, he wasn't able to understand what to do with his medications afterwards. And all in all, the stuff that you see here costs $1,000. So this is $1,000 worth of medications that he was not taking. And I am very sad to say that about 2 days after we did this home visit, he did pass away, which was a very, very, very sad outcome. So unfortunately, we weren't able to help him, but this is at least, this was a very, very strong educational experience for the team that did go out and the pharmacy students and residents. I'm sure we'll never forget him. So it's those types of patient situations that I really feel, number one, helps the patients, number two, helps to improve our curriculum when it comes to providing education for residents and students. The fact that health literacy, monitoring for preventable adverse drug events is an extremely important part of doing a medical home assessment. So in conclusion, incorporating a pharmacist and pharmacy students within a community-based care team can help identify and reduce medication-related problems, as well as supplement physician-provided care. Many home care teams are multidisciplinary. There's lots in the literature about this, but few include a pharmacist and or a pharmacy student. I think my talk goes very nicely with the other participants here that I feel like we're a very underutilized healthcare provider, that I feel, you know, that we can certainly help in helping more with patients on a public health initiative basis and providing specialty care. And this study kind of also makes that point as well. So for us, the next step would be to do a qualitative survey and analysis of the educational benefits for the pharmacy students and residents on these experiences. I would like to track acute care utilization of these patients that we see, whether or not, you know, from a hospital perspective, if we're reducing readmissions or emergency room visits. And then I would like to formalize our patient selection process for the high-risk patients. Right now, it's all resident-driven as to whom we go out and provide medical care in the community. I'd like to formalize that process a little more so we can identify those high-risk patients to make sure we're not letting anyone fall through the cracks that could really benefit from our services. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you foresee the community pharmacist, is it only in half the university setting to go visit patients, or regular community pharmacists to be set?
the problem is reimbursement. I don't know any pharmacist that would not want to be involved with community-based care. And the problem is no one's really paying for us to be there. The government, the federal government, doesn't recognize us as providers, so we can't bill for our services, only under MTM-related services. And there's a lot of political advocacy on behalf of us to try and get us provider status so we can bill insurance companies. And some states are a little bit state-dependent. In my state of Pennsylvania, unfortunately, we are not recognized as providers, but in the state of North Carolina, the state medical, state Medicaid, I guess, insurers do see pharmacists who have specialty education as providers, and they actually do reimburse for their services, whether it be providing community-based care or providing healthcare disease state management or chronic disease state management. But it's state dependent right now because the government, the federal government, doesn't recognize us. So, but we are always politically involved, that's for sure. Thanks for your question.
I want to open it up for questions to the whole panel, but thank you, all of you. I also learned, I think 27 years ago now, when I set up a pharmaceutical agency in the Eastern Caribbean that works with 9 small countries, how much pharmacists know, because in the committees where we're deciding what drugs to buy and things like that, the pharmacists could also always explain much more than the doctors knew, even though the doctors were doing that prescribing. I'd also like to repeat that anybody who'd like to be on a very low traffic APHA pharmaceuticals list, please give me your card, including everybody on the panel, please. Do people have other questions or comments, contributions?
I actually have a question for Jennifer. When you had done your evaluation of the pharmacies, did you ask if the pharmacists were part of a retail pharmacy chain or an independent pharmacy? And
actually, we recruited like from 2 pharmacy organizations. I can't mention them, but it's like, yeah.
Only because I feel that has an impact in terms of what services pharmacies and pharmacists can provide.
Yes.
You know, independent pharmacies, they can do carte blanche, whatever they want to do, but the chain pharmacists are very limited in what they're able to do.
One of them was a chain pharmacy, mm-hmm. which is providing the 3 ranges.
Okay.
Yes, so it's able to control for that.
I heard yesterday that Target is already having satellite pharmacies in Illinois where the pharmacist is counted.
I read that too. I was like, that'd be great if they could do that all across the country.
I know. That's what we were for. I'm a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm. Are other people in the audience pharmacists? I think everybody's got a low energy level late on a Tuesday. Okay. Well, if there aren't any other questions, I'd just like to thank all of the panelists again and all of you for coming. And please give me cards if you'd like to be on a list. What our main aim is to try to get more sessions that are about pharmaceuticals related to public health at APHA, and also to better communicate across section boundaries so that people are aware, because, you know, the program is overwhelming when people come in to try to find things to do. You can spend hours looking at it. So we're trying to just communicate so that people can find things more easily and we get a good quality of program. And also, if we have more people coming, we'll get a better time of day and a better location. I've learned that long ago from other sessions that I've planned. For this one, I just happened to be asked to moderate. But so we want to give the issues around pharmaceuticals a much higher profile, as they should have in public health. Thank you.